You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded, Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Nisiam, Nisiaya, Thikum Queen Ansep, Hydra CM, Nisiam, Nisiaya, Anthasiakuya, Talit, Sin, Homasqueam, Mustayo.
Welcome back to Community Living Radio, and today we have a special guest, Emily Gillespie, with us. And Emily, well, you know, we went through the whole how to introduce you thing, but we discovered that it was better if I just say, why don't you tell everybody who you are and what's going on?
Hi, so my name's Emily Gillespie. Thank you for having me today. I'm here to talk today about my new company. So it's called Accessibility Advocacy and Art. I'm focusing on accessibility consulting. So who am I? My background is in disability studies. I did a master's degree in critical disability studies at York University. And then I worked in the nonprofit sector doing project coordination and research work, as well as workshop development. And I'm a person with multiple disabilities, and I've always been really interested in the advocacy piece, and I'm also a fiction writer. So last time I was on this station, I was talking about my new book, and I'm kind of bringing together all my interests into a business.
Wow. Okay.
So that's a bit about who I am.
Yeah. Okay, accessibility, advocacy, and art is like, trust me, that's just three things that a lot of our listeners are really going to be interested in. So is there a bit of a story behind why these three things have come together for you and why they're dear to you?
Yes, so that's a great question. So I kind of feel like my whole career path was leading up towards creating this business. Like, my background was disability studies. I worked in nonprofits, which I absolutely loved, but unfortunately, because of funding, there wasn't really stable work. As a person with multiple disabilities, I've continually done self-advocacy and really learned a lot through that piece. And also, like, most of my friends and community are different folks with disabilities. We're also kind of doing that disability activism, but also thinking through different accessibility best practices. So, like, that's really what I'm passionate about. And then I brought the art piece in because I'm really interested in thinking about storytelling. So I mentioned before that I'm a writer, and I'm thinking about, what does it mean to tell your story? What does it mean for folks with disabilities to be able to share their narratives in meaningful ways to kind of challenge dominant perspectives? So I want to bring in, kind of use this accessibility, advocacy, and art as this really broad brand that can bring in all sorts of components for activism. So telling your story and creating tools to for people to use art to consider accessibility is something I want to bring in that kind of makes this unique.
Wow. It in a lot of respects, it does sound unique. Why don't you tell me a little bit about your how it is that we'll start break this down. We got three terms here. Why don't we break this down? Tell me a bit about how you personally have and how your business can help activism for accessibility first, and then we'll go through each of them right on through art and so people get to know what your business is really trying to accomplish and what your goals are. Okay.
Okay, sure. So how about I'm going to take a step back
okay.
for a second and say, so how accessibility, advocacy, and art, I'm focusing on public education. I've had the opportunity to do some adult education. I worked as a teaching assistant and also a workshop facilitator. So my main means of for this business is going to be focusing on building workshops and putting across that public education piece. And I'm also offering research skills as well as consulting. And I've had the opportunity to do that in a few different jobs and really love that research piece. So pulling back to, you wanted to kind of break down my title.
Yeah. Yeah.
The title is really hard to find a title that incorporates a big vision of what I was trying to do. So the accessibility, you wanted to know about accessibility and activism.
Mm-hmm.
So I really am coming at this, even though it's the business, from this really anti-oppressive, intersectional disability justice lens. And I'm really interested in activism in different spheres, whether it's thinking about environmental activism, whether it's thinking about the LGBT movement, kind of different components of activism. Yet often activist movements, not intentionally, just with resources and with how they're set up, accessibility isn't necessarily at the forefront of thinking about, how to design, say, a protest, or what does meaningful inclusion look like. So often, I think we've all unfortunately heard the term like the armchair activist, and the idea that, online participation in social conversations is somehow made lesser. So this is just one of the topics, but I'm designing workshops on what does accessible activism look like. So that's everything from thinking through the components of how to plan accessible protests to thinking through acknowledging the online work and other ways that people can be involved with social movements if they can't physically be in activist spaces that might not be physically or economically or in other ways accessible. So that was, kind of one component.
Yeah.
But I've had the opportunity to help over the years with different activist movements. So right now I'm on the accessibility team for Take Back the Night. In the summer, I had the opportunity to be part of the accessibility team for Slut Walk, thinking through different accessibility components for things that go into organizing the march before, during, and after.
Yeah. I've had the opportunity to film a lot of protests and or talks in forums around topics like around anti-bigotry and things like that. And mm-hmm. one of the things that I have noticed is just something as simple as if a person had to get in there with a walker, we're not even going to get into the wheelchair, right? Just something as simple as a walker or a cane, that how is it that, that if something was to go sideways with the protest or something like that, how were they kept safe? How were they able to keep actively participating in it? And I've seen very few. The only protest, and I wasn't actually there. I've only seen photographs of it where they did actually make it was accessible and help somebody with a wheelchair get into be able to protest was here in BC. Of course, everybody's talking about the Kinder Morgan pipeline, and
yes,
there was somebody in a wheelchair who they cuffed him to his chair and they carried him off. Mm-hmm. So I was like, but that's not the norm, right?
And I want to pull back and think through, what does that inclusion look like? Mm-hmm. Not as an afterthought, not on the day of, but from the beginning. So I want to help design best practices and get them out there for everyone doing activist organizing, both in Toronto, but also pulling back nationally, thinking about what does meaningful inclusion look like from this perspective, from the beginning.
So
that was like a really good example of kind of like the afterthought of
that was accessibility and inclusion. I bet you that was probably the afterthought. It's like, oh yeah, he wants to come along, man. I was like, oh, let's bring him, sort of thing. Afterthought, but how would we plan this ahead? How would we plan this ahead so that people who have some sort of a disability know that they're included in that, their voice is going to be included in this protest. So how does that look?
So there's different best practices for that. There's standards for planning accessible events, and there's also standards for planning accessible protests for things the day of. There's also best practices for thinking about inclusion in the first place. So that includes the day of, but that's also thinking about who has access to the advertising. So for instance, is the social media done in an accessible way? Can screen readers read the social media? Who are you marketing to? And then there's also other factors, like potentially putting together some kind of accessibility advisory team. So the voices of folks with different disabilities. So not just from a mobility standpoint, but you got to pull back and think about different disabilities, different experiences of disability, and how can individuals be included.
Okay.
And there's also ways to pull back too and think about, if people can't physically be there, what other means of inclusion are there? So that might be anything ranging from, you know, being able to follow tags online and have meaningful participation in conversations, to what does web screening live protests look like,
right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because really pulling back.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting that you brought that up. One of the stations that this show actually appears on, CFRO 100.5 FM, Vancouver's cooperative radio, one of the board members and also programmers is completely blind.
Okay.
And so. So things are being redesigned through their particular website, which is cooperadio.org. They're redesigning their website so that they know that he can use it, because having some deafness is like, I know I can still visually see, the visuals are still there. But maybe sometimes I have to turn things up a little bit to be able to hear it, right? That's one thing, right? Having the volume switch on your computer, right? That's one thing. But for this programmer, with him being blind, it's like, okay, so how do we design things, and how do we make it so that he has the right mobile equipment and everything that's easy to use and accessible for him.
Yes. And that might change between individuals as well. So everyone with the same disability isn't going to need the same accommodations.
Right. And as you were putting before, the social media, but we're also media, so trying to figure that out. So that like the ad work for that particular protest or cause is he's able to actually participate in actually spreading that news around, right?
Yes.
Because
what does it mean? What does it look like when, you know, if you're talking about activism, if you're talking about a business, if someone doesn't have access to the information? So I guess I'm pulling back and thinking about, you know, access to information, be it the invitation to the protest, the business advertisement, but being able to communicate in ways that acknowledge the needs of different disabilities and different individuals.
You're really digging down to the basic of it is what mm-hmm. I'm getting at. It's like, wow, it's mm-hmm. it was like I'm finding that this idea of like really it's groundbreaking in one direction, but it shouldn't have been groundbreaking. We should have been thinking this way, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a lot of it's relatively simple ideas about like what does inclusion look like, and not add on. Like I think that's one of my bottom idea I keep coming back to. Not add on inclusion, not after the fact, but for business, for activists, for the public sector, what does inclusion look like from the beginning, and not token inclusion, but actual meaningful inclusion. What does participation look like for individuals with different abilities?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I totally agree with that. And how does that? Okay. So now we've got we want to start inclusion right from the very very thought and beginning. So yes. How does that lead into now about the advocacy? How does that lead into our advocacy now? Because that's the next term in your title.
Yeah, I think when I you're getting me to really think today. That's good. So advocacy. Hopefully, that's a word that someday isn't as relevant, because you know individuals have to do, as a person with multiple disabilities in this community, advocacy has kind of been a part of my life from the beginning. And I'm thinking about as a consultant helping organizations and businesses and nonprofits think about this inclusion piece, think about the accessibility piece, and then advocacy. So one of the projects, I have a whole list of topics I know about potential projects that I can't wait to do, but advocacy for me was helping people think about their rights, so their disability rights. What does implementation of those rights look like? There's a lot of laws and legislation on paper, but what do those look like in practice? I find for me, advocacy it's not a skill that's really taught. It's something I'm learning on a daily basis, both for myself and as a skill that I can help others develop. So one of the projects I'm going to be doing is accessibility and knowing your rights. Right. So I want to develop this for people who are high school age and college age, because, personally, no one sat down with me and taught me about my human rights, about my disability rights. What does this look like? How do you ask for what you need? You might need certain accommodations, but beyond paper, what does this look like, say, in the classroom, asking for your accommodation, or in the workplace? So I just really want people to be aware of what their rights are, and how, in a practical sense, to go about thinking about advocating for them. And that's a huge conversation. I think that's kind of why I stumbled for a second, was because, this also pulls way back. But right. Accessibility and advocacy really go together.
And it's like one of those things, again, it can't be the afterthought. How do we start from the very beginning, right? Inclusion means starting from the beginning.
mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think advocacy, why I was trying to say that I hope it's no longer as relevant, because advocacy is is often kind of like folks with different disabilities having to ask for their rights to be implemented, having to ask for those resources. So that's like a lot of emotional labor, and also like a lot of practical skills having to negotiate advocacy.
Yeah, I see where you're going with this. If we're thinking if we're thinking about about people in a certain way from the very beginning, mm-hmm. the advocacy that their rights were already included from the beginning, so you don't need to advocate to have rights put into this. Need. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But since we're not there yet, I think it's a really valuable tool to think about and to learn, because it's really like that practical piece around accessibility, part of its advocacy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I hope that your wish comes true with the advocacy part. I like to see our world be one that where everybody is respected and loved, right?
So. Yeah, that's a nice vision.
It's like, hey, one can dream, right? So anyway, I want to touch on the art part, because art is always like a wonderful topic to kind of talk about.
Oh, for sure. And I kind of like how it's on the end. It's kind of the dream, the dreamer in me. So this company is really a vision of different accessibility tools. So, you know, it's, they're all, so the workshops, the research, the consulting, mm-hmm. they're all just different kind of ways to think about accessibility, to kind of push that idea of a more inclusive Toronto and Canada forward.
Right.
So art is also part of it. Okay. So like, I'm a storyteller. Before I was on your show talking about my novel, I recently won a short story contest as well.
Mm-hmm.
And my writing keeps going back to kind of these themes around social justice, particularly around disability. And I found it kind of incredibly empowering to develop the tools, these writing tools, both for like that kind of the art component and the craft, but also as a practice of thinking about my story, thinking about shaping narratives, thinking about moving from a space of kind of like voicelessness where there's, you know, certain ideas that have so much stigma around them. Like, for instance, I write a lot about mental health.
Yeah.
To be able to
Let me hold you up for 1 second there. We need to get to a break, and we'll be right back, and we'll pick it up from there. Okay. So
sure.
Just hang on 1 second.
There's only one way that old clunker is going to make you feel good again. Donate it to Bullying Canada. Check this out. Free towing or pickup of your old vehicle, a tax-deductible receipt, and a super easy process. Online at bullyingcanada.ca. Get rid of that old vehicle and feel good about supporting real solutions for change in your community. Donate your old or used vehicle to Bullying Canada today. Full details online at bullyingcanada.ca.
CITR would like to congratulate Surrey's Ekamjeet Gooman, the recipient of this year's People's Choice Award for the World Cerebral Palsy Day Change the World in 1 Minute campaign, led by Cerebral Palsy Alliance. Cerebral palsy is a debilitating neuromotor condition that affects movement, muscle control, and balance, and occurs in 1 out of every 500 births. Ekamjeet, an SFU student who lives with cerebral palsy, proposed the idea of featuring models with the condition in advertising campaigns, which was voted the most popular idea by cerebral palsy associations all around the world. The Cerebral Palsy Association of British Columbia believes that such advertisements will provide much-needed public awareness for this condition, which is often misunderstood or misrecognized. By increasing public awareness, it hopes to see all who live with cerebral palsy participate fully in our community. For more information about the Cerebral Palsy Association of BC, which has supported the cerebral palsy community for over 60 years, please visit www.bccerebralpalsy.com. For more info about the World Cerebral Palsy Day, please visit www.worldcpday.org.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Nisiyam, Nisiyaya, Thinkum Queen Ansep, Hydra CM, Nisiyam, Nisiyaya, Anthas Yakuya, Talitin, Homasqueam, Mustail.
And thank you for listening to Community Living Radio. And we're here with Emily Gillespie. And I'm sorry we cut you off to go to the ad, but keep going on how you're talking about mental health in your stories, and because you're a great storyteller, right?
I aspire to be. So how I go, the last part of my title is Accessibility, Advocacy, and Art. And with that art piece, I've been doing a lot of research around trauma and writing and telling your story. And I'm going to be hosting writing workshops to help other people share their story and think about, developing that writing practice. I've had other people help me along my writing journey, and I would like to incorporate this as well into this advocacy piece. And this can be a tool that individuals use either as their private practice, or that might be another way where marginalized individuals and people with disabilities can kind of share their story if they so choose. And the art, even though I'm focusing on writing for now, I might incorporate other components of art into this business in the future.
Wow. It sounds like you're really thinking this thing through and building it into what I hope is going to be like a earth-changing business. I hope that you reach billions of people with this on that. But
oh, okay. Thank you.
Why decide to open a business? Why decide to become a business owner with all the difficulties that go along with it?
Oh, for sure. I'm learning. So this goes back to these passions. So from a young age, when people asked me what I was going to do when I grew up, I always felt like I was going to do something that I hadn't even heard of, like the teacher, lawyer, those are great jobs. But I always felt like I was going to do something really out of the box. I went to school, I did the master's degree at York. I love writing. I've worked in the nonprofit field. I've worked with students with disabilities at the college level. Except unfortunately, I always joke, I'm a millennial that chased my dreams. So that's how I ended up here. But unfortunately, I didn't find stable work just in the field, because there's so much demand for thinking about inclusion, for thinking about diversity, for these skills. However, that doesn't necessarily always match with the economy. And I had the opportunity in different jobs to kind of start amazing projects, but there wasn't necessarily the funding backing or kind of the longevity. So through this, I'm kind of able to put together all this knowledge that I've acquired in different spaces. It's both personal knowledge and academic knowledge, knowledge acquired through volunteering and through my community and through different jobs, and kind of putting together everything I know into a sustainable way to give back. So I kind of keep thinking about that sustainability piece and designing this business, which kind of pulls back, puts all my vision, my dreams into this business. And I want to design it in a way that, I can guarantee it's still going to be here in a few years, and I can kind of organize it and focus my energy on different projects. And I think accessibility and disability is, really going to be the way of the future. I think Canada and Ontario are going to be having a lot of conversations, a lot of thought about accessibility issues currently, but also really in the next few years. And I want to be here to not be an expert, but to help that conversation, to share what I know and help make a more inclusive Canada.
I think this sounds like you becoming the expert.
You're never an expert. The more you know, the more you realize there's so much more you want to know.
Well,
so I'm just kind of here to help help ask questions, help have these conversations.
Yeah.
For but all sectors.
I totally see where you're going, because sometimes expert means that you are, for lack of a better term, you're the know-it-all, right?
But that's I don't think anybody is an expert.
But I agree with you on the point of that, like you said, that we have to keep learning, right?
Keep learning, keep asking questions.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's one of the reasons, that's what got me involved in the sciences, because, and it's still like a big passion for me, even though I do all the media work I do now, but it's about, the reason why I keep going with this is to keep people asking the questions, because we don't know it all, and how else are we going to learn if we don't keep asking the questions?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So is that also a big part of asking questions here and there? Is that also part of the journey of you building this business?
I think I've always been the person asking questions. So for me, I don't want to drag this into a philosophical conversation too much, but I think from a young age, asking questions has been part of untangling ableism. Mm-hmm. So kind of like ableism, the idea that folks with different disabilities are somehow lesser in society. And I was the kid asking questions from a young age, looking at school policy, looking at the ways different institutions are set up, and kind of asking questions of their policy, of their design, of who they're created for, of who's left out. So I think, you know, kind of asking those questions and trying to figure out what the answer to them are from a really inclusive community perspective that brings together as many voices as possible is really part of untangling ableism, complicating dominant social ideas about whose bodies have worth and what it means to have disabilities.
Right. So while we're on your journey, it's like I love hearing people tell their story about how they've actually got to where they are, especially if they're deciding to start a business like you have. So what else has led into your journey as a business owner and starting accessibility advocacy and art? So
I think I mentioned before, like I've had a handful of jobs in the field. However, they didn't feel sustainable. So I really, you know, I'm sure I'll do more work in the community. I'm sure I'll do more work with nonprofits and doing research on the side.
Mm-hmm.
However, I kind of had this bigger vision. So I wanted to create something that was sustainable so that I have all of these ideas, I have all of this knowledge, and I want to be able to give back and to be able to, people are already asking me about accessibility. I've gone to events that weren't necessarily accessible, and the coordinators, sometimes they don't want to talk to me for half an hour or an hour after the event about best practices, about things they could do moving forward, about how to better include folks with disabilities, how to market to people with disabilities. So I was already kind of having these conversations.
Mm-hmm.
So starting this company is kind of putting down my skills on paper, on the internet, saying, here's what I know, here's what I can offer, and let's have these conversations, let's keep going. And here I am. So it kind of felt like, you know, having acquired all of this knowledge, I would really, it feels like a disservice not to try to share some of it. So like, I know about all sorts of topics from, you know, planning accessible events, accessibility and activism, disability and sensitivity. That includes things like thinking through language, disability and human rights. I've got to do cool human rights monitoring projects over the years, disability and business. Done a lot of reading, done a lot of research on these different topics, and I would like to be able to share this. So that's kind of this business is my dream of how to share what I know. And I absolutely love doing research as well. So that's why I incorporated, you know, all of the things I feel I'm good at and passionate about. And that I also feel is really needed. Like as we move forward, I think a lot of businesses, I think a lot of public sector organizations, I think a lot of schools are going to want to have these conversations, are going to want to do trainings on some of these topics, are going to want to think beyond existing legislation about how to be inclusive. And, you know, I want to be here and to be able to offer what I know.
Yeah. So, okay, I'm gonna ask a kind of a twisted question to you. So get ready.
I'll
get,
try.
Yeah, get the bat up for the curveball on this one. So how to put it to you? So you have a long-term vision of how our society is going to become more accessible and be more respectful of everybody overall, right? But how it's okay, certain things that I do, like say if I wanted to hire a camera person, but I wanted to make sure that wanted to make sure that I included everybody that could possibly learn the skill. How do I make sure how do I ask for everybody to come who would be interested, regardless of visual and regardless of visual abilities or not? How would I put that out to the world so that I got like the most passionate person about getting somebody else's story out there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good question. And also kind of, you know, there are, you know, it's a complicated question, but also a good one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where more inclusive hiring practices are really important. So for jobs, you do need people who have the expertise and the training, mm-hmm. but you also need to think about how to make not only the job accessible, but the workplace, the interview process accessible.
Mm-hmm.
So oftentimes folks with disabilities aren't adequately even accommodated during that process. So I think it's, you know, following the legislation of your province as well, but also thinking about where you're advertising the job, how you're advertising it, maybe what kind of testing processes you're doing during the interview process, if you can create a way that you can understand diverse individual skills. Like some people might exceed more one type of testing than another during that interview process. And kind of going beyond just making accessibility and inclusion, you know, a statement in a corporate policy, but actually thinking through those components during the selection, during the advertising selection screening process, and then actually in the workplace, thinking through accommodation, and again, not as an add-on, but actually is, you know, something meaningful and developed with different individuals, right? Since
right.
everyone's accessibility needs are going to vary.
Right.
So, like, I have certain disabilities, but I couldn't tell you the exact needs of other folks with the same disabilities as me because they're going to vary.
Yeah. What are some of your disabilities?
Oh, hey. So I kind of break my disabilities down into, you know, three broad categories. So mental health, I have a learning disability, and I also have chronic pain. So it's interesting for me because I have three disabilities that have varying impacts on my daily life that are also invisible. So in certain contexts, I pass as an able-bodied individual. Yet disability is very much part of my everyday life and part of my, you know, childhood experiences and also part of my education experiences. You know, like I had to fight for my right to education, you know.
Okay. So one was a learning disability.
Yes.
And I'm going to describe this for me growing up, because I grew up with a learning disability that wasn't realized to be a learning disability until after I was in university. I remember this in high school, and that was a long time ago. In 1984, I'm in my last year of high school, and the high school guidance advisor sitting me and my mother down, saying, "Well, you know, he's never going to amount to be the leader of a company. He's not going to achieve a bachelor's degree," which I have a PhD. and he's not going to be much more than some grunt laborer in somebody's auto mechanic shop, right? And here I'm sitting here doing media and telling people stories to the world, like yours, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
So was that a similar conversation for you when you were in school? Like the advisor sitting your parents down and telling you that this is what they're never going to amount to much of anything, and now you're doing this, right?
Honestly, we could do a whole hour or two on ableism in my school experiences, but what you said just kind of made me think about, you know, a broader category of different barriers folks experience when trying to access resources. So there's like structural barriers, but there's also often attitudinal barriers. So it's kind of like what you're mentioning, right? When they sat you down. But yeah, so like I knew what accommodations I needed, what would be helpful, yet sometimes like you might face resistance from higher structural levels in an institution, but you might also experience kind of resistance from the level of teachers not wanting to provide accommodations, or thinking, say, an accommodation might so accommodation idea is to kind of put you on the equal playing field as other folks, yet if a teacher, if someone you're working with doesn't understand that, they might think they're kind of giving you an unfair advantage. So, I've definitely faced those attitudinal barriers, had to fight to get the testing I needed in order to kind of get the proper paperwork trail to get accommodations. So yeah, there's all sorts of barriers. I acknowledge my privilege in even being able to have the proper supports, have the proper economic supports, have the proper family supports, be in the proper political position to kind of advocate my way through those barriers from the elementary school level all the way to the grad school level.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's a really complicated question that's hard to answer succinctly. But there's layers of barriers, you know?
Yeah. I think you handled the question pretty well. We're going to go to another break, and you're listening to Community Living Radio, and Michael, and I'm here with Emily, and we'll be back after these couple messages.
The ITR is broadcasting its Global Accessibility Awareness Day special. Join us on Thursday, May 17th, 2018, from noon to 6 for exclusive global access and awareness featuring gifted and talented artists. That's Thursday, May 17th, 2018, from noon to 6 on CITR 101.9 FM. And to get involved, you can email accessibilitycollective@citr.ca.
Three women, dressed in lingerie, were hanging from the ceiling on meat hooks. In an adjacent room, a man was in bed with two deceased females, also wearing lingerie. He positioned their arms in a sexy embrace. Down the hall, a man holding a chainsaw stood over the motionless body of a sixth woman, lying on a table covered in plastic. These are scenes from a popular music video by a Grammy Award-winning artist. If we want violence against women to stop, shouldn't we stop treating it like entertainment? Join the conversation at #NotOkay.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded, Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Nisiyam, Nisiyaya, Thinkum Queen Ansep, Hydra CM, Nisiyam, Nisiyaya, and the Skahuya, Talitin, Homasqueam, Mustayo.
And welcome back. This is our final segment with Emily Gillespie, and she started a business in Ontario that's called Accessibility Advocacy and Art. And I'm hoping that it actually does make its way all the way here to British Columbia, because it's just the kind of business that we, heartfelt business that we need here in Canada. To give everybody a fair shake and chance at living an abundant life. So, so Emily, we kind of cut off at attitudes of people that actually stop inclusion. So, attitudes are really important. And what type of attitude would you like to see people have, So that we all get the help we need, so we all can succeed?
Wow. So many big, like, so many of these questions are so important, and, you know, I'm so excited for this to be my job, so I can have these kind of conversations all day. So I think one of the big attitudinal barriers is thinking about what kind of people are valued in society. And it's kind of funny, I'm starting a business, yet I keep going back to thinking about economic worth of individuals. And there's certain ideas about productive bodies, certain ideas about producing labor, certain ideas about what a meaningful life looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of like these dominant ideologies really hurt certain folks and certain folks with disabilities. The kind of cast judgment on which lives are worth living or worth supporting. So I want to kind of, you know, pull back and, you know, we have lots of conversations, lots of very needed conversations about racism and homophobia and transphobia and classism and ageism. And I want to pull back and make sure that ableism and disability is also thought about in these conversations when we kind of push against dominant narratives about which people are viewed as valuable in society. Mm-hmm. So we're pushing way back when you start talking about disability.
Right.
And I want to also think, too, like, disability and stigma and discrimination has so many layers to it. So I think folks experiencing different disabilities might experience different levels of discrimination and exclusion depending on the nature of their disability and in relation to their other privileges as well. So, for instance, you know, maybe a white, straight individual, you know, say with something like depression, might have a lot easier time kind of navigating that than someone who is more marginalized or who has a different disability, one that there's less understanding around, one that there's more discrimination and stigma around. So there's kind of like untangling pieces that, you know, all disabilities mm-hmm. are definitely not viewed and understood the same way.
Well, you mentioned mentioned invisible disabilities, and
yes, when talking about myself.
Yeah, and I understand invisible disabilities, and I've done work with a group here that wraps around fibromyalgia, which is. For the most part, invisible to most people. And the story was that this young lady, I think she at the time was like 30 years old, and she parked in the disabled parking slot. And an older gentleman chased her with his cane because he's like, how dare you use your grandmother's parking sticker and everything to take advantage of people who really are disabled. And she parked in that spot. She usually didn't park in that spot because, hey, I can make it to the store. I can walk all the way to the store. So, hey, I'm going to have fun. I'm going to walk all the way to the store today because I can, right? But this is one of those days where she just wasn't feeling up to it, and she needed to get something from the store to help her day along, and so she took the disabled spot. But that's another one of those attitudes. Like, it wasn't apparent to him, so he reacted in a very negative way. So how do we? I mean, what are your thoughts around how we can actually help people stop thinking this way?
Yeah, I think there's so I just want to respond to what you said and agree that I do think that unfortunately happens a lot. People think that, you know, disability is something that's going to be visible to them or to always appear the same way. So someone with chronic pain might, you know, have a really bad pain day one day and maybe need that parking spot or that seat on the transit one day and not the next day. So yeah, that's part of a kind of complicated conversation, but I do think with invisible disabilities there is need for an awareness piece. And I also think, you know, when I hear that parking lot story, yes, that really all disabilities aren't apparent, but it also makes me go, why are there only a few parking spots? Because unfortunately I think folks with disabilities sometimes almost get pitted against each other when there are so few resources, you know, be it for the parking spot, be it for the seat on transit, be it for funding dollars.
Right.
So I think, you know, it goes back to also a conversation about needing more resources for folks with visible and invisible disabilities. But also, you know, more awareness, more social conversations about invisible disabilities.
Right.
But it also brings out another piece as well around kind of like the pressure to disclose disabilities. So folks with invisible disabilities or visible disabilities as well might not necessarily always want to feel pressured to kind of tell their stories, to explain, you know, why they need accommodations. So I hope we can some days as a society kind of push past that onus of pressuring folks with disabilities to kind of like come out and to need to tell their story in order to get the accommodation they need. Because you know what? Someday someone's going to be tired and just want their parking spot, not want to have to tell a stranger part of their life story in order to get their accommodation, you know?
Yeah, yeah, that is very true, right? You know, you just want to have access to the resource. Not have to like, well, this is why, and
that goes back to that advocacy piece as well, you know.
Yes,
that I hope someday that advocacy piece is less needed.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it's kind of how funny how the whole thing's coming well rounded. There's a lot to this. And because we're going to start to run out of time soon, and there's one question I do want to actually get in there, and I want to know if we had the perfect world, what would it look like to you with it, around it, around these topics?
Wow. No, I'm just thinking. I don't think we have time for that kind of answer.
Well the Cliff Notes version, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's a loaded question, right? I'm thinking. I just want to pull back and make a more inclusive world where that is, where including people with different abilities, with different disabilities, who are in all different social locations, that intersectionality piece from the beginning. I don't want to have to fight for access to resources, for voice, you know, watching what story you tell, so you're not discrimination. I would like to kind of pull back and create public sector and businesses and nonprofits where everyone's ideas and right to exist in those spaces is equal and celebrated. I hate the narrative of, you know, disability kind of like this add-on or any ideas around burden. Like, where is the space to kind of pull back, think about accessibility and best practices and how to include everybody in a way that's a lot more celebratory, a lot more we want to include. Not, oh, there's legislation we should include or we need to, but yes, let's embrace this. Let's embrace what different folks have to bring to the table, you know, people with different life experiences, with different experiences living in bodies. What else do we have to say? I think oftentimes folks with disability, different disabilities, have really unique perspectives and really interesting ideas, and I hope there's more room to share them and really embrace that difference rather than trying to pretend everybody's the same, because we're not. And I hope someday that's a big celebration and not a burden.
It should be a big celebration. It definitely should not be a burden.
I don't know what I was going to say there, but I think that's what I feel.
So you're right. It shouldn't be any of those. It should be a celebration, not and we're just going to forget the burden part. Celebrate.
Mm-hmm. Celebrate
ourselves as people.
But also celebrate and acknowledge difference.
Right.
I think a lot of I don't like work that kind of tries to pretend everybody is the same. You know, people with different disabilities, you know, they might have different experiences, so I don't like that erasure of difference and let's pretend we're all the same because we're not.
Okay. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, we got through the loaded question.
That's part one.
yeah. And I'm sure we could actually do, well, maybe we should do a whole show series about that.
I'm sure we have topics for it,
yeah,
if you want.
And bring in other people to have more and more to make the conversation expand, right?
For sure.
You know, I'll actually I'll make another phone call and get back to you on that idea.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, like, I'm sitting here writing about that actually. So
yeah. So now I am actually running out of time. So I need to give you 3 minutes now to tell people the best ways to get a hold of you and why they should really work with you. Okay.
Okay. So thinking about accessibility is really thinking about inclusion, about who has access to, you know, your business, to your nonprofit, to, you know, your school, your institution. So I really think accessibility is the way of the future. And also thinking about what does it mean to kind of do good work to invite everybody to use your services, whatever they are. And I do research, consulting, workshops, designing workshop series on all different topics. If you would like to learn more about me or my existing work, you can follow me on social media. So my Twitter is Accessibility, Advocacy, and Art under the name Emily Gillespie. And my Facebook is the same. So Accessibility, Advocacy, and Art. Feel free to message me on Facebook or on Twitter. My email is gillespie.emily.m. So that's Gillespie, gillespie.emily, emily.m@gmail.com. And I look forward to continuing these conversations. And, you know, I hope I'm back on this show and I hope to hear from you, because I think there's a lot of really important work being done in this field and a lot of necessary conversations that I look forward to having. Okay. So thank you so much for having me today, Michael.
Oh, it's been great having you. I remember our first conversation and around your book, and
yes,
and that was really cool. Mm-hmm. I felt uplifted after talking to you, and I feel that way again today.
Yeah, and that writing piece too. You know, it's not done. It's coming back into this. Yeah. You know, incorporating art into activism, because I think that's really important. So thank you again for having me, and accessibility advocacy and art on Facebook. Thank you again.
Okay. Thank you so much for joining us today, Emily, and thank you for everybody for listening. And again, you've been listening to Community Living Radio.